We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Mike DeCorsi talking college hoops with Mullin Haugh, Sporty News college hoops columnist, Big Ten Network studio analyst. He's a Liverpool supporter, but we let him on anyways. Mike DeCorsi with Mullin Haugh on 670 The Score.
Mullin Haugh, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to Mike DeCorsi, and joining us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline is Mike DeCorsi, CircaLasVegas.com. Michael, good morning. How you doing?
I am doing all right. How are you, Molly?
Oh, I was doing great till Arizona lost, and that was my finalist. That was it. That basically, my bracket, my championship team died, so that was the end of that, and I was just stunned. I could not believe Clemson, and they played a great game, and they came out really strong, took a big lead, and then they held on, and they held on and held on, and I kept thinking Arizona was coming back, but unfortunately they didn't, and Clemson gets through, and now it's Clemson, Alabama. Isn't that unbelievable? One of those teams will be a Final Four team.
Well, if you remember, maybe I didn't say this on our air, I'm not sure, but I called that region the region of the unreliables. Mm. And the problem that I had in selecting a team out of that region was that you had to select somebody who was wholly unreliable. And we have two of them in the final. There was no way around it. Every single team down to about Clemson on the seed list in the West region was a team that showed the capacity to lose to almost anyone. And that's not a good thing to have when you're trying to win the NCAA championship. So you had to pick somebody out of that region. But did you really pick him to beat UConn? I mean,
well, I picked Illinois to beat UConn.
Yeah.
That game is alive. Listen, UConn is like the greatest team ever assembled, and they are unbelievable, and they're winning by 30-something points. I just thought everybody on God's earth was going to pick UConn, and it's hard to double down. I mean, I misread it.
He made an error. He may or may not be wearing orange today, Mike.
I made an mistake.
You know, hey, it still could turn out. I wrote about that last night for this morning. The Illini are a threat to UConn because they play differently, and differently is good this time of year. You saw it in the Arizona game when Brad Brownell threw a zone out, a 1-2-2 zone, and Arizona didn't even try to attack it. They just said, "Oh, I'm open." Boom. Then clank. And they did that 25 times. I think they were 3 of 28 or something like that. When you're different, it can be an absolute advantage this time of year. And the fact that the Illini operate with Marcus Domask playing with his back to the basket on the perimeter isn't something you see every day. It is if you're in the Big Ten. You saw it every day that you turned on BTN, every day you turned on FS1 or whatever, or Fox. You saw it all the time. But when you're in another conference, you don't. And that's one thing bad in their size and Terrence Shannon and the fact that they showed last night that they can defend when they're committed. Those are all assets that they can take into the UConn game and believe they have a chance.
You said it would be legendary if they could beat UConn. That would be how big of a deal it would be, because Connecticut is winning the last 9 games in the tournament at a rate, average margin of victory, 23 points in those games. And the last time that's happened, I think Florida was the back-to-back champion. So I guess the easy question is like, well, how would you do something different? Would you change anything if you're Brett Under? Would you give them something different if they are trying to adjust to – then you adjust to their adjustment. I don't know if it will come down to coaching, Mike, but I think if you had to look at one key Saturday, what would it be?
Well, you know, it's funny because I thought coming into this game, the number one key was to make sure that you didn't turn over the basketball. Coming into the Iowa State game, didn't turn over the basketball at an exorbitant rate, because that's the one thing. Because Marcus is not a true point guard, could they take the ball off you as you advanced it? And ultimately, they really didn't, except for maybe when Dane Danger decided to do that little spin move in the middle of the floor. For the most part, they transported the ball well from the backcourt to the front court, and that was good. I think in this game, like I said, the differences are built into who you are. The fact that Coleman Hawkins can play at the top of the key and direct offense from out there and put it on the floor and maybe go by a Donovan Clingan, the terrific 7-foot center that UConn has. That's something that is different. Marcus and that ability to basically be a post-up point guard. He gets his back to the basket and they can run. Brad did a really nice job of designing a lot of different sets out of that particular look. And I wondered last night, would they be able to get to that look? And for the most part, they did. They took it away on the left wing where Marcus prefers to operate, but then he did it on the right and got a lot done. So I thought that Brad did a terrific job of adjusting in that game. And then one of the things that I've spoken about a lot on BTN is that Brad isn't one of those guys who says, this is what we do, and this is what we do, and this is what we're going to do until we can't do it anymore. He says, this is working. Let's do that. And last night in the game when Terrence Shannon had the four fouls, it was obviously crunch time and the right. game was getting close. And he could have said, nope, I don't put him back in until we're after the 4-minute timeout, because that's what I always do. And that's not what he did. He said, we got to win this game and we got to trust Terrence to get us there.
Yeah, I got to tell you, that was great stuff. UConn, they look so formidable. I know that they haven't, played the best schedule. Obviously, they had a 16 seed. They have cut a swath, though, through this tournament to this point. And, I mean, it's one thing to win a game. It's another thing to play the way they're playing. It looks like they are like an unstoppable force. The only hope being, if they're within 5 points, have they experienced that yet? They've been winning, 9-7 straight games, 10 plus points in the tournament. You just wonder if they get in a close game, will that shake them a little bit? Because it doesn't look like it.
Well, but that's what we thought in 91. Yeah. If you read my column, I went through this little sequence of teams that beat teams that were considered unbeatable, so to speak.
Yeah.
That's why I said it would be legendary, because I remembered every one of those without having to look them up. I mean, those memories. Indiana losing in 75 when they were undefeated to Kentucky when Scott May was hurt, and Vegas in 91 losing to Duke, and Duke losing in 2002 after they'd won the championship the year before and brought everybody but Shane Battier back, and losing to Indiana, not a great Indiana team. And those things just happen in this tournament sometimes. And this is a much better Illinois team than the Indiana team that took down that Duke team. Now, I think this is probably a better UConn team than Duke was that year, but it's all possible. That's what they have to go into the game believing, that it's all possible. And it's not going to be easy. I mean, UConn has Stephon Castle, who's playing at a really elite level, but then so is Terrence Shannon, probably even more elite. And they have Donovan Clingan, who's, as I mentioned, big and mobile. Well, he's got to keep up in the base lineup. He's got to keep up with Coleman. So there are different things that they can do that are different than what UConn has faced all year. And I'll tell you this. I mean, one of the things you noticed right away was Illinois saying, hey, we played against that Cam Spencer guy last year when he was at Rutgers. He didn't all of a sudden turn into Jerry West. He's a really good player, but we know what we're facing with him.
Exactly. So, Mike, when you look at tonight's games and you look at this weekend, what poses the greatest challenge for Purdue in the Midwest? And do you feel like Marquette is good enough to get through in the South?
Oh, I definitely think Marquette is good enough. They'll probably have to defend at a higher level than they did on Saturday when I saw them here in Indy. But they're definitely good enough. It's a challenge for Marquette to face DJ Burns tonight, the big, wide-bodied, low-post guy for NC State. he's done a really great job in this tournament and the ACC tournament to get NC State here. So that's a challenge for them, but they're a better basketball team than NC State, and they should be able to get through it. And then Houston, Duke. Duke is a very talented team, but not overwhelming physically. And Houston is a overwhelming physically team, but not a very talented team in some ways. They don't have those high-level NBA guys that you usually expect to have on a team that's so dominant. So I think Marquette can. I think Marquette can survive it. I'm not sure that's what happens because everybody at that level has a chance to win. But I do like what Marquette is right now with Tyler Kolek playing at the level that he did over the weekend in Indy. And for Purdue, I think that for me, it's always two things with them. One is, do they get a fair whistle? And they have been in this tournament. They did during the Big Ten season. They didn't in their two eliminations over the previous 2 years. I suspect they probably will because they're not facing the mid-majors now that are smaller and overmatched physically and just hung on and the ref kind of felt bad for them or whatever it was. And so I think that's part of it. And then the second part of it is just themselves, making sure that they play their best basketball. And that means getting the ball to Edie in dangerous positions. That means Edie making free throws when he is fouled. And it means somebody has it helps to have two or more, but somebody's got to make shots, whether it's Fletcher Lawyer, whether it's Lance Jones, whether it's somebody off the bench, somebody, at least one player has to be making shots.
I think that the Zags are not the team they've been before. They're a good team. I don't know that they're not done, but Purdue against, I think the Tennessee Creighton game could be the best game of yes. this round. And I think the winner of that game will give Purdue a scare, if not to do well there.
Yeah, I think I've said all along that the Sweet 16 game I'm most interested in is that one because it's two teams that I believe have the goods to win the national championship. And I didn't think there was any other game in the Sweet 16 round that had two. Some that had one, obviously, but no one else had two. And that's why that game, to me, tonight is the one that's most exciting.
So Clemson, Alabama sounds like a bowl game, Mike. And yet it will determine who goes to the Final Four. How surprised are you, and what's the secret for both teams?
Well, I'm stunned, honestly. I always thought Clemson could be a good team, but they never seemed to believe it. They were only 11-9 in a fairly middling ACC. They should have had a much better record than that, and they really caused a lot of us to lose faith in them. They could have been a top three seed and wound up with a six because they kept falling to teams that weren't significant. They lost by 21 in the ACC tournament to just an okay Boston College team. It's hard to understand what it was that wasn't happening for them in the regular season. Because like when they had their visit to Carolina, that was such an important game for them. They showed when they had Pitt come into their building and Pitt needed the win to maybe get a shot to be here. Then Clemson showed, but there were so many nights when they didn't. So I'm stunned by that. Alabama, I'm not as much. Like I said, somebody, one of the unreliables, had to win, and I thought Carolina would beat them. I thought that they would that outlast them offensively. I did not think that Hubert Davis made good decisions in that game. I thought playing big against Alabama didn't really add up to me. Having the three bigs out on the floor at the end of the game, last several minutes, just didn't make any sense to me. And I don't think they defended well out of that. And offensively, they made some significant mistakes. So Alabama took advantage of that. They are a fantastic offensive basketball team. Mark Sears, who transferred in from Ohio, became an All-American guard. And when people complain about the transfer portal, what they're not realizing is that people like Sears got opportunities to do what he's doing at a higher level that he might never have gotten before.
Right.
Or Dalton Connect at Tennessee. That's two of the top 10 players in the country, and they would not have been on this stage either at the schools they're at and the leagues they're at, getting the television attention they get, or here this deep into the NCAA tournament if they hadn't gotten the opportunity to transfer to bigger schools.
Yeah, I think that is a very interesting element of it, but I do agree with the people who have said that the portal – needs to be put on hold while the season is ending here. Let's watch the end of the tournament and get back to the portal because there's so much action going on and there's so many teams that have to be aware of it and recruit it, and it just feels wrong. It feels like you have an NFL free agency during the Super Bowl.
Well, they have the ability to constrain that in the NFL because they have a collective bargaining agreement.
Yes.
And unless and until we get that in college, I think there'll be more freedom for the athlete than some are comfortable with, especially the coaches. But, you know, there were four coaches that changed jobs within 24 hours of losing their final NCAA tournament game. You can blame that on the transfer portal. Some have in my mentions. But the fact that they were that ready to move on suggests to me that maybe what's good for the goose might apply here.
That's a really interesting point, Mike. I do think that there are recruiting moratoriums, though, right? There are dead periods where they're typically respected, and that can be enforced by the NCAA. And that's what I wonder if, you know, Gonzaga could lose tonight but still feel like it's a good week because they got a transfer from Pepperdine, I believe, in the transfer portal. So I wonder if there is any momentum. If it is, the coaches do change jobs. That's something you can never get past. But player empowerment, should it include, if you're taking 3 weeks away from their ability to transfer, is that really the end of the world?
Well, I think it's the fact that, think about where it ends up. I mean, you're almost at the end of your semester by the time you get to the Final Four, or by the time we get to Monday night. You're almost at the end of semesters in a lot of schools. So I do understand maybe why that's the case, why you have to give them some time to make these decisions, to find out what's out there, or even just to make the decision of whether to enter the portal in the first place. I think that's why they do it, because it's such a compact time period. You can do it a little differently in football because semesters end, and then you have the chance to make the decision in that month when prior to bowl games. I think that I see a little bit of both there, but I'm not sure what the harm is, to be honest with you. Do coaches have to be aware of it? Yeah, but Brad's not worried about that right now. I mean, he's got assistant coaches, and even more so, they've got staff members. Most of the schools now have directors of recruiting that can deal with that. And then if something pops up and somebody's interested, then, you know, Brad can take 3 minutes or whatever and make a phone call and find out whether that player in particular might really be seriously interested in becoming the next Terrence Shannon.
Great stuff, Mike. Really appreciate it.
Thanks,
really,
Mike.
A lot of great information. Can't wait.
Thanks, guys.
We'll be reconvening here on Monday, picking a Final Four.
How about that?
Yeah. They'll pick us. They'll tell us who the Final Four.
They'll tell us.
Yeah, we failed to pick a Final Four.
Well, we didn't. I lost Kentucky, and I lost Baylor, and you lost everybody last night.
Oh, I lost my lead dog.
You still
Arizona.
Have Illinois.
I still have Illinois. I still have Houston and Tennessee.
I still have UConn and Purdue.
I've got three.
I have two.
You got the two favorites in the tournament. You got the two top number ones in the tournament.
I did it. I know, but like sometimes you have to take the gimme.
Yeah, I should have taken UConn, but I still got Illinois.
It's all right. I thought the Arizona was a good one.
Oh, did you? I did.
I thought it was a good pick.
Right up to the point where they were eliminated.
Yes, right up until last night.
Yeah, right up to the end of my bracket.
So close.
The embittering element is I lost my championship. That's you lost. You know, you lost immediately. You lost Kentucky.
I lost credibility.
But yeah, you didn't.
I still got my champion, though.
Yeah, you got your champion.
How about Mike not being that bothered by the transfer portal remaining open? That surprises me.
I like what he said, though, because he's right. There is no collective bargaining agreement.
I don't know if he's right. I mean,
I think
there is no CBA. The NCAA is a governing body.
Part of my secret, reason for having all the teams in the tournament close down the portal is because I think the Ramblers have contacted like 17 guys.
Well, yeah, you have to make tournament to be distracted.
Somebody got in the portal from their team. They got three spots open, I think, and they've contacted 17.
Wouldn't you rather be in the tournament?
I'd rather get like a couple of studs.
To get you in the tournament.
To get me in the tournament. Right now, David, I'm looking at the future. I'm not looking at the past. That's me.
That's you.
All right. We've got a lot to get to. What?
Yeah, I want to clarify one thing I talked about with is the baseball broadcast.
Oh my God.
When we come back.
Why don't we drag a dead animal into the studio?
Dustin is texting the show. When he's off texting the show, I think we have to address it because our executive producer says we should.
Stay.
So I will.
Concentrate on the Tennessee-Creighton game tonight, Dustin. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. And you want to clarify something, Mr.
Well, we had a conversation earlier about local broadcasts, and I think it's something that gets a lot of attention in this town.
Yeah.
We love our baseball announcers.
We do.
And we react to their performances. We react to their personalities. And I made the comment that John Triffin did a terrific job in his first day on the job next to Steve Stone during the broadcast on NBC Sports Chicago. I said that it's my preference that if I were giving him constructive criticism, I would avoid using we and our. Like, our bullpen, we are trailing 5-4. Whatever the case, it's a personal preference, just my opinion. Some people share it, some people don't. Part of it was rooted in the idea that he just got here. So you aren't necessarily – I think the Sox fan base, particularly, Sox fan base has a pretty good BS detector, and I don't know that you always all want to assume that you're part of – a group that maybe you just arrived when you just got here. So that brought some reaction on the text line and otherwise. And on my phone, our guy Dustin wanted to know if it was okay if Hawk or Coom, our guy Ron Coomer said we. I think there's a distinction here. I think that's what I wanted to clarify. Coom and Steve Stone. Steve Stone can say we and our all he wants. He wore the White Sox uniform. Ron Coomer was a Cub. Hawk Harrelson was the general manager of the Chicago White Sox. Players, I think, have a different – players who go into the booth, I think, do have a different code. I have no problem with whoever player, ex-player is in the booth saying we, our, us. That's fine. But when you are a professional broadcaster, I do think that you – and you aren't a former player. You have a sense of professionalism that you want to – always keep in mind. That's all. It's not for everybody. I'm not saying I'm right. That's just my opinion and my preference when I'm listening or watching a game.
Here's the thing. Like, you're a trained journalist, so there's no cheering in the press box. So when you're covering a team, you're not allowed to use personal pronouns. It's just
that's true.
Nobody's allowed to use it. So that's you're kind of trained that way. And when you hear it, it does kind of...
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it gets to you a little bit. So
stands out at least.
But you definitely hear it. So it's no big deal. It's not the end of the world. And as you say, you know, if Coach Wonstadt wants to use a personal pronoun, he was the head coach of the Bears.
He was on the sidelines.
When you talk about Stoney or Ron Coomer, those are excellent things. They can use the we and the me for a lot of different teams.
Absolutely.
So I have no problem with that at all. And you know, you're grandfathered in. And I think that it's different for broadcasters, but if you want to do that, then go ahead and do it. It doesn't break my heart. It doesn't bother me one way or another. It probably bothers me. But I understand you're paid by the team and you feel like you're on the payroll and part of it, whatever you choose.
Thanks for that content, Dustin. That was really a good 7 minutes.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Thanks
appreciate
for
you. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for ruining the show
from a distance, as opposed to dropping that bomb from afar.
In.
Yeah, way to go, pal. Can't wait to see you Monday.
Yeah,
Dustin taking a couple well-deserved days off, thankfully.
Oh my God!
No,
I gotta tell you,
not thankfully. I'm just
this
kidding.
Is a tough crowd. This hey, this particular
you mentioned the Bears. I want to get to a couple of things before we get out of here because it was in all of the news that we watched and digested yesterday, all the sports that we enjoyed, there was a report that Roma Dunze is going to visit Hallis Hall.
That's good news.
And so with that ninth pick, we have talked about all of the things that could happen there and all the ways you could approach it. Them bringing in the Washington wide receiver who is possibly likely going to be on the board then.
I want them to treat this visit like a free agency. Don't let him leave the building.
Well, that's impossible.
You make him stay till you draft him.
Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to remind you about the CBA. Okay. You can't actually sign draft picks before they're drafted. But you would like to see him like his experience here. So if they do take him, he feels good about joining a team and an organization that will definitely need him, could definitely highlight him, and he could grow with a rookie quarterback like Caleb Williams. That's exciting. That's exciting to consider what the Bears would be capable of in the passing game if they actually got Roma Dunze at number nine.
According to the report, he's got meetings with the Cardinals, the Jets, and the Bears, and he's already been to the Giants. They flew him out and had a meeting with him after the combine. So the Giants, I thought they were going to take Malik Nabers, right?
Nabers is considered to be one or 1A, likely not the second receiver taken, but I did see a conversation on the Four Letter Network yesterday asking the question after his impressive pro day. Malik Nabers ran
4.35.
Goodness sakes.
Yeah.
And he's big and he's strong and he's got great hands. And somebody asked the question, they were debating, let's put it that way, if Malik Nabers' pro day was so good that they would take him instead of Marvin Harrison Jr.
And I saw one mock draft that had Marvin Harrison Jr. dropping to the Bears at nine, which is absurd. Not happen.
Whose mock draft was that? Staley's?
I just said one mock draft.
Staley's mock draft?
I don't remember whose it was.
That's crazy.
I'm telling you that there and maybe it's because he didn't do anything and he won't do anything and they don't have any information on him. Whatever the reason, they had the two receivers going ahead of him. It's insane.
I don't think that's real likely.
Yeah. Are the Bears going to pass on him?
No.
Javon Carter style?
This is totally different scenarios.
Okay.
Totally different.
It's a joke.
Totally different logic. And also,
it was not a 4.53. It was very fast. Somebody says I'm wrong about
Malik Nabers.
No, what was Malik Nabers' time?
I think he's talking 4.53. That was Michael Penix Jr. I think he ran a Washington.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good for a quarterback with bad knees.
With bad knees?
Yeah. Malik Nabers is, there are no football questions about Malik Nabers. There are no speed questions about Malik Nabers.
Well, there are character questions about
that's
Malik.
That's the question that I think would be surprising if he moved up, but maybe teams are willing to do that.
I think Marvin Harrison Jr., if you look at the game tape, that guy is an awesome player. He's a 6'3" version of his Hall of Fame father. Is he 6'3" or 6'4"? He's just a big, strong version of his dad, who was a Hall of Famer.
I'm looking at that mock draft right now. I mean, I see it. Number nine, Bears. That would be amazing.
Didn't I tell you who?
Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN.
Was it Mike Tannenbaum?
Are you kidding me?
I told you I saw it.
Mike Tannenbaum?
Did I not say that I saw it?
Who does he have going before? I need to see this. How did I miss this?
I don't know.
And as I'm looking at it too, he only has one receiver ahead of him, and that's Nabers to the Giants. I don't even see. It just gives me the top 10 right now.
So he doesn't have a Dunze? So does he have Alt going where?
Has Alt going five to the Chargers.
Well, yeah, they like him. That's the rumor, or that's the word. Wow.
He also has J.J. McCarthy going to the Cardinals.
That's crazy. That would mean that they're trading Kyler Murray to the Vikings under that scenario.
Malik Nabers, during the LSU pro day, he jumped 42 inches. He had a 4.38.
Yeah, I knew it was.
It wasn't 4.3.
It was blistering.
That's pretty damn.
You're sub four.
Oh, see, we went for the same comment.
Came with the same scouting school.
That's right.
If you're sub 4.4.
We went to that. And here's one. LSU Wire. Malik Nabers stuns with unofficial 4-3-5.
So
that's where I read it.
You counter that with the fact that Marvin Harrison Jr. in this scouting world where teams live and they spend a lot of time between now and the draft, Marvin Harrison Jr. did nothing at his pro day, did nothing at the combine, daring teams to pass him, daring teams to drop him on their board, which I think is foolish. I think that's going to be one of the biggest misreads if they any
oh,
team.
Oh, if you that would be such an error.
You overreact to a guy that decided he did not want to participate in this little pre-draft bonanza of testing. I'm good with that. I've seen enough of Marvin Harrison Jr. to know that, all right, unless he's been arrested, indicted, or committed, I'm drafting him.
I'm looking at Malik Nabers right now. He had a 10-foot-9-inch broad jump.
Wow.
Is that possible?
I don't know, apparently.
That's not possible. Am I reading that wrong? The video is, he's standing still and he just jumps. I'll tell you what, his 40-yard dash is unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. Now, Roma Dunze is still a very, very dangerous and explosive option for the Bears if he's still there at number 9. I like I like that possibility a lot because he doesn't have the 4-3-5 or the – he's not Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers, but he's very good, Molly.
10 feet, 9 inches. He's standing there, David, and he's like – using his arms to pump him up, and then he broad jumps almost 11 feet.
Imagine that.
If
you're on the 3-yard line, you could have a play where he just jumps in. Broad jump in. Broad jump pump.
Whatever you do.
Just draft him. You're not going to be able to draft Malik Nabers. I don't think so.
No.
He's not going to be there at 9. Neither will Marvin Harrison Jr. Your decision at 9, if you're the Bears, is going to come down to, we'll repeat it many times between now and the April 25th draft. It's going to be wide receiver, left tackle, or the first defensive player off the board. I really think it's going to come down to making a decision, the second offensive tackle, the third wide receiver, or the first defensive player.
I might go on a rant about how people need to wrap their minds around Marvin Harrison Jr. as a 9 pick. I keep hearing these Bear fans complain that they've got an embarrassment of riches and they're getting too much out of the draft.
You can't even compare that.
Okay.
You can't even compare
that. I think I just did.
That's way, way off. Way, way off.
Bear fans angry that they got too much out of the draft. What?
Not even comparable. It's
basically the same thing.
If you're suggesting that there aren't Bears fans who have...
I'm suggesting... That whether
commented you, about Caleb
okay,
Williams.
If you're fishing around and trolling around looking for trolls, then you're going to get trolled. But the majority of people in Chicago are excited and will be very appreciative if the quarterback helps them win a game.
When
that happens, everybody is going to not worry about anything else.
I'm not going to disagree with that, but I will say that it's a much different climate 2 weeks later. Close to 2 weeks later, since they traded Justin Fields.
Oh, so you're now, happy now that they got rid of the negativity.
Stop putting words in my mouth.
So you're saying Bears would get too much if Marvin Harrison fell to 9.
I'm not even factoring in your ridiculous draft scenario. I'm saying that as it pertains to the QB conversation, that there were a lot of people in town. It's hard to quantify. But I heard from people, you did too, that when Justin Fields was the incumbent quarterback, people were looking for reasons to disparage Caleb Williams, and they were finding silly ones. And there was momentum, and it may have been a loud minority, but it was loud, and it was loud enough to resonate.
Yeah,
less than 2 weeks ago.
So don't go on a rant about it now.
The people were making fun of Caleb Williams and his pink phone. That was a whole thing.
Yeah, you referenced my pink phone earlier. That was pretty funny.
Well,
who cares what phone I have? I have a new phone, by the way.
I know.
I am now on – my phone is so new that I need a new charger to charge it. That's how new my phone is.
Are you still at – I was just going to read your number on the air.
Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot. That's really good.
Are you still – oh, wait a second. That would be awesome. Yeah.
Well, I got your digits too. You want to play that game?
You know, one time what I did?
See who gets more crazy
calls. You know how
I
sometimes put out on hey, here's what we have coming today on Twitter and whatever social media. I put my phone number out there.
Oh, did you really?
Yes, I did.
You sent your phone number out?
Yes, I did.
Did anyone pick up on it?
Because
it's probably still out there. Alerted people.
I deleted it within like 5 minutes or less.
Boy.
But you type in, I'll call 312-644-6767. I typed in my number.
Subliminally desperate for a phone call, David Hong has sent a text this morning.
Please don't call or text. It's a weekend.
Yeah.
It's Friday.
That's crazy.
Inside the clubhouse. Gotta do that.
It's so funny. I have friends who are like, hey, so-and-so asked for your phone number. Should I give it out?
No. I know that's your answer. No.
It's like, what? Like, when did I start hiding? When was I suddenly unavailable to anyone we used to know? Oh, God. What a world. We got who's with us next?
Dan Lawrence.
Dan and Lawrence.
I believe
Lawrence in the hallway.
I think it's Dan and Lawrence.
Looking good for himself. Okay. We got Dan and Lawrence. They'll be joining us next. It's Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.